All right, lots to cover today. Let's get started. And Kim, I'll come to you first and then Suzanne, and we'll go back and forth this way. Kim, you're in your office this afternoon after we get off the Zoom, minding your own business, and you get a call, you get an email, you get a contact from a couple. You don't know them. They're reaching out saying, "We want you to help us do a destination wedding." Can you tell us, what do you do to pre-qualify a couple you don't know? And are there certain questions that you always ask a new couple to kind of see how serious they are?
The first thing we would usually do is we have a form that we send them, and it's going to ask some basic questions like how many people are you inviting, or any of your guests under 18. They're very basic. My marketing company got on me a while ago because they were like, "You have too many questions on here." And I was like, "Okay." So I scaled it back. It's super simple, just to kind of get an idea, like, are there any destinations they're looking for? I typically only work with all-inclusive resorts in Mexico and the Caribbean. So I want to make sure they're not asking for, a European destination, which I will entertain, but that's not my bread and butter. So I want to just understand what they're looking for on the surface. So are there particular destinations or resorts that you're interested in? And that's pretty much it. I do all of my qualification on the actual consult with them, which I know we'll probably get to in more detail later today, but I like to keep that part super short. And that was really because our marketing company was really saying, like, if you ask too many questions, if there's one they can't answer, then they're just going to abandon the form and not complete it, which made logical sense to me. So we really shortened it and kept it short and sweet.
Great. Suze, what about you?
So I go a little bit different approach. I want to know who the decision makers are, the financial contributors to the wedding group. I want to know if they're more of an intense planner couple or more of a relaxed to go with the flow couple. I ask them specifically, do you guys agree on what you need versus what you want? What does this vision look like to each of you? The second party, are they going to be involved? So, like, if it's bride or bridegroom or groom, whoever the non-dominant is, are they going to be involved? And what's their planning level? And who's my main point of contact? I need to know where I'm putting information to, so I'm not just flooding the groom's email box and he doesn't want to hear any of this. He just wants to show up, or if he really wants to be involved. And then I ask them if they're looking specifically for travel agent services or if they're looking for planning and design, pretty much everything that comes before they get on a plane, or if they're also looking for coordination and concierge, which is everything they get after they get off the plane. So, because I have three services that I can offer up. So that's kind of my little five piece, here's what I need, meet and greet kind of conversation. Because usually when we have them approach us, they say, "Hey, I saw you on such and such page." So I already kind of know what kind of resort they're thinking of. And as far as size goes, I don't care if it's tiny or big, if it's going to meet my criteria of, being a group. So
Okay. Either of you, do you have, are there any red flags that stand out at you that maybe somebody's a price shopper or you're the 18th travel agent they've spoken to? Are there red flags that come up that make you want to say, "I'm not sure we're a great fit"?
yeah, that you pretty much just said them. If they indicate that, "Oh, we've talked to a lot of travel agents," I'm like, "Nope, I'm not your girl
No.
then." I think some of it, and probably a lot of travel advisors, have this like second sense of sensing out those people that probably aren't going to book. But again, for me, like, I do most of this actually on the consultation. I don't do a lot of pre-qualification prior to that consultation because I do require that they either get on the phone or Zoom with me. But the biggest thing is definitely if they're from any country out of the US, because it's, we really can't book them or book them easily. And if they're working with a lot of travel advisors.
Okay.
I'm on the same as Kim. If they tell me they're checking other agents and stuff, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to step out of this then because I'm not going to force your hand to choose me or choose them over a quarter difference in price. What I would like to do is work with people who want to work with my expertise at this property or this situation. And I really don't want to, I don't want to take up your time and take up my supplier's time if you're price shopping a bunch of different agents. So it's not fair to me. It's not fair to them. And it certainly isn't fair to you because now you're put on the spot of having to choose over a quarter or 50 cents difference in a room night versus in what you're really looking for, which is service.
Okay, let's move on to consultations. And for all the guests who are with us today, if you don't know much about the association, we do a ton of training all year long and have for years. So we have a lot of recorded trainings. I mention this because we're about to spend probably 8 minutes on the subject of consultations, for which we have a couple of hour-long class videos just on consultations. We have a 5-page list of possible consultation questions that members can get. So we're going to hit just some super high points today. If you join us later, you'll have access to all those resources. But Suze, I'll start with you. How do you schedule your consultations? Do you have like one of those calendar pages on your website people can go to and pick, or do they just call you and email you, set the time?
So yeah, I actually use Calendly if they want to actually go pick their time. But if they're having like a chat with me on Facebook or on Messenger, or they found me through another bride and they gave them my cell phone number and they're texting me, I will literally just say, okay, these are the times I have available. I offer two. I'm pretty firm about two because if they're serious, I'll make one of them work. I do make sure they're in different times of day, usually one over lunch break. And I usually say I can do something over your lunch break. I don't say what time zone I'm in. I just say over your lunch break on Wednesday, or I can do something on Friday morning, for example. I don't go out of my way to offer anything after hours because that's my time and it's very, very valuable time with my husband and my family. If I absolutely have no other choice and I really think we're a good fit in all other aspects, I might make an exception here and there, but I let them know it's an exception for the consultation. It's not going to be a continuous exception. They have to be able to work with me on my schedule. When I do offer the consultation, it's no obligation. They get up to 2 hours. I usually get it done within an hour, but if it's really going well and we go ahead and start into more of a, well, here's our ideas and here's what we're thinking and here's what we've gotten so far on our own. What do you think about this? It can take a little longer. So I make sure they know that if they want a longer time, make sure they're available for that longer time. And my prep is pretty much I try to answer any and all of their questions, including ones I don't know. I will say I honestly don't know a firm answer to that. I think I know what I'm getting ready to tell you, but I want to make sure it's correct. So if you don't mind, let me verify my thoughts and send it back to you on an email. And I can certainly schedule a second call if we need to go over that specific item after the fact. It's okay to say I don't know. It's absolutely okay to say I don't know because there's so many pieces and parts. And I tell them, look, there's 1,000 resorts we're talking about in the Caribbean and Mexico. This resort, I do enough with them that I think that I know the answer, but I want to confirm it hasn't changed since the last time I read up on it.
Okay. Kim, what about you? How do you schedule?
I definitely use Calendly. And if any of you guys are not using a scheduler, and there's a bunch of them out there, but Calendly does have a free version. So if you're not using it, highly recommend it. Really makes your life easier instead of the going back and forth. And yeah, like Suze's approach of here's two options, but it gives them full transparency to what you have. I also do not typically, like, I can't tell you the last time I did a Saturday or evening consultation. I very rarely do them. I do ask in my, as I call it, my intro email that they, I prefer to do it over Zoom because it's for me, it's very hard to read their expressions when I'm sitting on the phone. And also, a lot of times I have someone on my team cross training with me. Because they might be the one that's going to ultimately service that group. I do the sales, they do the service. So I like them to kind of be there from day one. So Zoom is a lot easier for that, which I love. And of course, with Calendly, it's putting that reminder on their calendar, it's sending them reminders, text reminders. So that part is really, to me, key. I Almost never, and I'm sure I'm gonna like jinx myself today, but I almost never have anyone stand me up for a consultation. And I think honestly, because I don't really engage in a ton of conversation with them prior to the consultation, that gets your tire kickers kind of out right away. Like if they can't commit an hour to spend with me, then they're probably not going to be a good match. In my intro email that I send them with the Calendly link, I briefly describe my services. I also include my fee and what it starts at, although I use the same fee for all my weddings. It doesn't really go up, but I include that in there as well. So that's not a surprise when we get on the call. So I think that also narrows out some people perhaps that or like, oh, I'm not going to pay a fee. So they move on and it's all good.
Okay. Let's talk about consultations, and I'll come back to Kim first and then Suze. And I want to ask you, there's a lot we could talk about, obviously, but give me one or two key tips or advice you'd give the rest of us who might be newer to this. Any tips about running the consultation? Are there questions that you always ask, or is there something you always look for? And do you have one or two great pieces of advice for us about the consultations? Kim first.
I mean, I don't think any of these are going to be like earth-shattering. I have my basic questions that I need to know. Again, like, will there be someone under the age of 18? I don't say, will there be children because they don't click with the 18. So I always say under the age of 18. I also really want to know how many people they're inviting, not how many people they think they're coming, how many they're inviting, because that's going to tell me how I determine how many rooms I want to contract. And I really take that piece out of their hands. If they tell me they're inviting 100 people, I have a very simple proven formula that works for me. If they're inviting 100, we estimate our room block that half of those will come. So 50 people will come, and then two adults per room. So that's a room block count of 25. And if there's kids in the mix, that's fine. Unless there's like some large amount of kids, then I would decrease the number of rooms. But that is how I do it. They never have a grasp on how many people are actually going to come. So I like to determine that so I'm not holding too much space. So those are for me the things I need to know really to structure kind of the call the way I want to structure it, know which angle I'm going.
Okay. Suze, what about you?
So I also ask how many people they're inviting, not how many they think are coming. That's a big one for me as well. I actually always ask, how'd you find me? There's a formula like she says about her room. So, and I don't disagree with her that you have a formula. I will tell you that mine tends to be 60 to 70% return. So if I have 100 people coming, I have 35 rooms on average. So I think it somewhat depends on how your people are and what kind of people you connect to. And obviously personality, sometimes you'll find this personality works with you and that personality works with Kim. So maybe that's something to do with that because I am finding 65 to 70%. But the how to find me question is really important to me because a direct referral is a hot lead. That means another bride has said to them that they know you should talk to Suze. That's a hot lead. That's going to close. Found me on social media from a referral request, like a post that they put up and said, hey, does anybody in my circle know a travel agent for destination weddings? Well, that's pretty warm still. Found me on Google is definitely lukewarm. And seeing someone else that they don't know randomly suggesting me, they are probably checking out 10 different agents. And so that's a cold lead to me. It's a cool to cold lead. If I get to be the first one or second one they're talking to, and I will absolutely say, oh, did you get a lot of response? Did you find a lot of people? Oh, yeah, I found like eight. Okay, great. Where am I on the list? Did you talk to me first or second? Those particular, I keep separate statistics. So when I speak to couples, I have a 93% close rate. When I speak to couples from that, I have a 78% close rate. So if I know I'm early in the list, I'm likely to close it because I'm answering things that maybe somebody else won't answer or didn't think to answer. If I'm late in the list, they may have already made their decision and they're trying to see if there's something better out there. So I'm not going to put as much time into that call. And then I ask them what they know about me. I'm like, oh, what did you know about me? What did you find out when you looked me up? And if they really Facebook stalk me and so forth, and they start telling me about me and there's something wrong, I laugh. I'm like, well, let me clear that up for you. And I will correct it because I want them to know that, oh yeah, that's true, that's true, but that's a little far-fetched, you know. And so I will laugh it off and say, let me clear that up for you. But if I know they Facebook stalked me or Googled me, or have you ever, Kim, have you ever put into the Google search thing your name and DWHSA?
I've never
Don't
done it
do
with
it.
DWHSA.
Yeah, it's amazing the stuff you get, and then AI tells you all the reasons. I mean, there are things on there that tell people about my awards in 2014, 15, 16. So add your associations to it, add Hard Rock to it, add your name with whatever combination you do a lot with. And it's pretty funny. So I go out and I look to see what the world's saying about me. And if I know they've stalked me, they've actually done some research, they're more likely to close with me. So.
Yeah, good. Some takeaways here, because again, consultations is a big part of getting your head straight about what you're going to recommend back to them. Because we're about to talk in a minute about proposals, the recommendations you're going to give back to the couples. The number one question we hear from most members over the past 13 years that we've had this association, how many people, how many folks do you plan to invite? Is probably the number one most important question most members ask during the consultation, because the answer you get back can tell you how much thought they put into the guest list. Have they really sat down and started counting how many people they may plan to invite? And the real answers they give you could determine which destination you send them to, certainly which resorts you pick for them, the other, the room categories. There's so much information that revolves around that one question. So in the prep materials we sent everybody, we did mention we would tell you what seems to be the number one question to ask in consultations. And for many of us, it is how many people? And Kim and Suze, let me throw this out to you. One thing I've heard members say over the years too is they had to break the habit from their early days of talking too much about themselves in the consultation. We've had members say they would start the consultation by saying, before we talk about your wedding, let me give you a little background about my agency. And then 15 minutes later, we're still talking about I'm on Elm Street and I've been in business for 800 years and I've done 20,000 weddings. And so it becomes more about you. And I've had members tell me they've really had to break that habit, asking more open-ended questions with the getting them talking and you're taking notes. It's so much more important to have them talking. And then maybe in the last couple of minutes of the consultation, you can tell them a little bit more about yourself, but we keep it really more focused on them instead of you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I limit that and just kind of, you know, they want to, I can sell them on how we run the groups and our process and how we help them. I don't have to focus on me and my accomplishments. Half the time, honestly, I forget to even go into detail on that because there's like so much info I want to cover in an hour. And so it's like that to me, you know, I've got them at that point.
Yeah, I would agree that putting it little bits and pieces and letting them tell you what they know about you is way more powerful than you telling them. You can literally turn on your screen and show them every award sitting behind your head if you want to. I mean, they're going to say, what's all that? Those are my awards.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh. And then you go back, so tell me a little bit more about what you're looking for in your needs and wants, you know. If you downplay it a little bit, like this is just your norm, and yeah, like I said, you can correct things that they may tell you that's wrong, and you can let them know a little bit about your process, as she said. That helps them understand that they need you, because they don't have that process. Sometimes they don't know if they need an agent, and I mean, just making sure that they know that there is a process that they're unaware of, and that there is an expert on their side on their representation for them. Helps them a lot. And so, like you said, bio at the end or bio little bits and pieces, but not all the whole thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Kim, you mentioned body language, which I think was so important in consultations. So I ask both of you, Kim first and then Suze, are there any specific body language cues you look for that are either positive or negative?
the biggest thing is, are they engaged and paying attention to you? Like, that's why part of the reason I love Zoom, because I think it forces you to, focus and be present. Whereas when someone's on the phone, you can be off ironing clothes or doing whatever. And it's just, I think the biggest thing is seeing that, seeing their expressions, seeing like that they're agreeing and comprehending things. I think that for me is really helpful. And if I find that I don't think they're really focused or understanding, I will kind of pause what I'm doing and start op asking a lot more open-ended questions of them to try to get them to like communicate and participate. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Suze, what about you?
So body language 101 is when they cross their arms or they lean slumpy back instead, or they lean slumpy forward, or we call it the ab Aunt Ebony. Everybody in their family has an Aunt Ebony. It may have a different name, but if they start going, that means they're checking out. Something's not connecting, and you need to figure out what it is or be ready to move on. Because anytime, so there was a story about, and it's short, but it's a story about one of my destination weddings, and they had an Aunt Ebony. And Aunt Ebony is my most memorable guest, and she did not travel because she wanted to know why the resort would not include her air with her room at that rate. And when I was like, well, those are different products. This is an airline and this is a resort, and I can't include them at the same rate. I can certainly price for you the air and try to package it for you. She started going, And so we coined this thing. My husband happened to hear it because I had on speakers since my ears were out of juice. And he walked in. I was like, here I am on the phone. And after he got done, every time I said something he didn't like for the next month, he goes, So we call it the Aunt Ebony effect. If they start Aunt Ebonying me, we know this is over. It's not worth my time. And I can ask them other questions to try to, like you said, open them back up. But if they're closed down, don't waste your time. There's somebody
Yeah.
else's his right for you. There's a head for every bed, a butt for every seat, and an agent for every wedding.
Yeah, good. Suze, let me come back to you first and then Kim. What if the couple presses you on the spot in the consultation for pricing, specific resort recommendations, where they really want
Okay.
answers from you then without giving you time to go back and do any research? How do you handle that?
Well, if it's, for example, if they're naming a specific resort and I've worked with them plenty of times, I can tell them based on my history and on my ability of knowing what they're going to offer that it should range between here and here for this season or that season. But keep in mind that it's all based on dynamic pricing of supply and demand. And I do use the example of, butts and seats. The airlines only have so many seats, the hotels only have so many beds. So if the demand is high for that time, it is going to be higher than what I'm telling you. If they are absolutely pushy about it, I'm like, really, without getting a full-fledged quote, it's not a fair thing for me to try to tell you further than what I have. I said, if I tell you something that's not a realistic number, you're getting your hopes up for something you want, and I can't promise you that's what's going to be. I can tell you that historically, it's about 10% less than what's online with their regular rates, or 5% less than what's online with the regular rates. But I'm not going to be pushed into a corner, and I let them know that nicely. I'm like, I am more than happy to get you a quote, and I can give you a real number, but you have to give me time to do the job. And if you want to get a quote, and you want that, it's not going to cost you anything for me to go get you a quote. So it takes a couple hours of time for me to get it, explain it to you, and make a decision. So, it'll take a little bit of time to get, but all in all, we're going to have a couple hours invested between this call and that call. And then we move
Okay.
forward.
Okay. Kim, what about you?
So, what I usually explain when they ask about budgeting is I always kind of say there's a sweet spot, and my goal is to get your pricing in that sweet spot. And we know the resorts that typically price there. Now, as you all know, sometimes you go in to price one of your favorites and it's like $1,000 more than you expect. But I stress that part, and I give them a ballpark. Typically, and I say it ranges, it depends on the time of year, the number of nights, all the things. But generally, I find for my wedding guests, a good sweet spot is like between 1300 to 1500 with your hotel and air. If they're coming from not really a very obscure, expensive location. So I keep it very big because obviously air can, I mean, I live in a market that has extremely expensive air because we have no choice. So I kind of take that approach. And like Suze, I mean, I don't have the rates in front of me, so I don't know what they are, but I kind of start with that. And then with hotels, I do mine a little differently. After the call or at the end of the call, I tell them what the next steps are. And for us, at that point, we do require that they pay a research and design fee to get started. So we actually do not provide quotes until we've received that fee, and that locks them in on their commitment with us. And at that point, once they pay it, I mean, we'll pretty much give them any amount of quotes they want. Like, I'm not trying to limit it and say three and then you pay again. Nope, it's a one and done fee. So I don't discuss resorts with them on the call. Now, I will ask them, are there any resorts that you've seen that you really like or any that you dislike? And I say, like, it doesn't really matter if you love this adults only one, but you're going to have kids. Like, I'm kind of looking more for like aesthetics at that point. Like, oh, I get it. These two resorts look alike, so I can see why they would like them. So it helps me understand what type of resort catches their eye. And if I have an objection to that resort, and I will tell them flat out, like, I'm the most blunt person you will meet, and I will tell you right off the bat if I don't like a resort and why I don't like it. And not because, like, oh, one night my room service was bad. It's more from like a contracting, like, they don't handle groups well. Our lives are not going to be fun for the next, 10 to 12 months if we book with them. It's bigger picture things like that. So I will, as they mention resorts, I will bring up things like that that I think they need to know.
Okay, let's do one more budgeting question with consultations, then we'll move on. I'm sure something that comes up with both of you a lot and a lot of the agents listening in is the disconnect at times between the couple's budget, because they've been dreaming about the destitute wedding of a lifetime that they want to do, and the guest budget. When the guest has been asked, this is the fifth destination wedding this year they've been asked to. Kim first and then Sue. Kim, how do you handle that disconnect where you're picking up right away in the consultation that they have big dreams about the destitute wedding at a resort or a destination that is going to be difficult financially for their guests?
Yeah, I had this one bride that wanted this resort in Cabo. And it was, one of the top like 5-star resorts. And so, I actually don't focus a lot on the budget. Now, first of all, and I think Suze, you and I are going to probably be different in this area. I don't do any of the wedding planning or anything like that. I only handle the room block. So I make that very clear right up front. Like, the start of my conversation is, this is what your wedding planner from the resort will do. This is what I do. So I make that clear. So I don't get a ton into the packages, but I know the resorts well enough to know which ones are going to be like super expensive. And this one, when I contacted the resort, it basically it was going to be like an $80,000 wedding just right out of the gate without even flinching. So I was explaining that to her, and there definitely are people that will pay that. So I never want to like discount someone's ability to pay for a wedding, but I want to be realistic and like, I think you're going to probably start kind of in this range. So in that case, $80,000. And if they flinch, then okay, we need to bring that down a notch or seven in that case. But if they don't, then we will continue down that path. But because I don't get into the wedding planning part as much, I don't get a lot of the budget objections. I know that my average wedding for like 50 guests is going to be between $15,000 to $20,000. So as long as they're in a range fairly close to that, I think they're good. And I will explain to them, I'll say, you and I could get married at the same resort on the same day, have the same package, same number of guests. And my husband would tell you my wedding would be $20,000 more because I would add on all the fun little things that you need to have on Pinterest. So I kind of use that example to set the stage of, It can be very different. And at this point in the game, you have not determined all the things that you want to choose for your wedding. So that's going to kind of come down the line. But you know, if they say my budget's $3,000, yeah, that's a red flag to me. Like, I don't think we can pull that off. But as long as they're, you know, up in that 10,000 and above range, it's usually pretty workable for the wedding portion, not for the travel portion.
Yeah. Okay, Suze.
Okay, so I understood the question differently. Were you asking about the wedding or were you asking about the guest cost?
Either way you want to address
Okay, so for the wedding cost, because I
it.
do planning, I definitely want to know approximately how many people they're inviting and what their financial comfort zone is. I never say budget. Budget tells you what you can't have. Financial comfort zone tells me what they want to spend. Because what they want to spend and what they're willing to spend are two different things most of the time. And as long as you're within 20% of what they want to spend, you're usually okay. So for wedding, that's how I focus. And I help design their, obviously their budget, their financial list out for them. But again, always calling it a financial comfort zone, not a budget, because when you think budget, it's what you can't afford. It's not what you can. So it's just a psychology thing. For your guests, that's a completely different thing. If somebody tells me that they want to go to, let's say, Unico, but they want $200 a night per person, I am 100% going to say, I love you for wanting to provide such a nice thing for your guests. I do, but you're not going to provide it for that price. I just can't get it for that. And that's not realistic. Tell me what you like about Unico so I can see if I can figure out a property that might fit similar aesthetics as Kim mentioned, it gives us an idea of what they're looking for, that might fit more closely to the numbers you're trying to get. Are you wanting something that feels very authentic Mexican, because of all of the, you know, unique little pieces of art that Unico has? Are you wanting that, you know, woods and chic contemporary blend, because it's all wood and it's all chic and clean lines and contemporary all at the same time as being urban. If that's what you're looking for, let's look at something else. And so we go through those bits and pieces and break that resort apart. Obviously, we can't put them in a Oceans hotel if they're wanting Unico. We can't put them in a Ryu hotel if they're wanting Unico. That's night and day difference. But there are some places out there that kind of give you a little of that bird of Mexico that you can sometimes find, like the new Fives Beachfront or Oceanfront, which are ones right next to the beach and residence. I always get those two mixed up. But it's got little cabins. It's a small property. You have access to the big property. It has little cabin style rooms that have a very artistically influenced, you know, Mexican culture feel. And so sometimes that will work, and it's a significantly less than Unico. So I try to kind of, you know, break it apart a little bit. And then I tell them, look, wherever we send you is somewhere I've already been, and it's somewhere I'm willing to go back. I won't send you somewhere that my feet haven't been on the ground in the Caribbean or in Mexico. And I'm talking about to that resort. And I will not send you somewhere that I have put on a do not sell list. If you ask me for something that's on my do not sell list and you insist on going there, I'm going to send you to another agent who's a button pusher. I am not a button pusher. I am here to protect your interests and to protect you as a client, not to push buttons. And they back down for a second, like, oh, I'm like, yeah, your commission is not worth my moral compass. I have to know that you're going to be okay at that resort and that I feel like it's a decent return on value for you, return on investment. And if I don't feel that about it because of things I've experienced or you know, requests we've had and feedback we've gotten, or my personal experience of being there, or my agent friends who have been there, and we've all discussed this property and how it's went downhill, I'm not putting somebody there until I know that I've went there to check it. Period. It's not worth the amount of commission I make is not worth me, you know, altering who I am as my ethics and morals in taking your money. You saved up way too much for this.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Great. Folks, you know, again, we could talk a very long time about consultations. There's so much to discuss. So if you joined us late, I want to make sure we cover questions. If you have, we have a lot of questions in the Q&A window. We will be giving you typed written answers to every question that's put in that Q&A window. So on your Zoom screen, you should see a Q&A question and answer window. It might be a little button. And it could say chat instead of Q&A. So whatever one you have, just click that and then start typing. We're collecting all the questions. Tomorrow into Friday morning, we'll be typing the answers. Our goal is by the end of the day, Friday, send you an email with a Q&A list, all the questions that were asked and quick answers typed in. And we'll also have a video of the entire conversation today. That'll be ready for you Friday as well. And then if you don't see your chat window, your Q&A window, you can also send us questions at our email address, support at our initials, DWHSA.com. All right, let's move on and we'll go to Sue's first and then Kim. Contracts, client agreements. So important to protect us and to manage the expectations of clients. And so, Sue's, I'll come to you first. What do you do as far as client agreements? Do you use them with every destination wedding couple or just some of them? And then, what are some of the clauses you've learned over the years that you want to have in writing? Let's go to you first and then Kim.
Okay, so I might be overkill, but I actually have a client agreement for the couple that's the group leader. And then I also have a client agreement for every adult that's within the group. It's a terms and conditions, a credit card authorization, and a trip protection form. And I absolutely will not book a room without that signed. And every time they make a payment, they have to sign it again. So it is 100% on documentation. And if you don't get it documented on every single couple, that's the one that's going to screw you. So it's going to happen. Don't do it. It's not worth it. I mean, I don't care if they're your friend. You need to have things in writing. You need to tell exactly what you're mapping out what you're doing and what that expense is. You need to map out your costs, your penalties, any fees you might have, any cancellations you might have, what the supplier is, who the supplier is, and the fact that you are the go-between them and the supplier, that they don't have access to that supplier. It's in writing in mind that they are there to work with me directly and that my contract with the supplier is on their behalf, but it's a contract between me and the supplier so that they can't put themselves between me and the supplier. With all of that being said, the reason you do this is to protect yourself and don't use the supplier contract as your contract for the guest or the group leader because it's going to give them their penalties, their terms, their details. And now you've worked for a year and they cancel and you have nothing to show for it. So it's really important that you put your buffers in there, like cancellation buffers, date buffers, all of those things. If you don't put all of those things in, you are going to get yourself in trouble. So detailed work, penalties, fees, costs, buffers, date adjustments, and what you are requiring them to do to stay in good standing. If you don't want to do a 10-room wedding, you want a 15-room minimum, put it in there. If you don't want them to earn their comps until a certain amount, put them in there because those are all things that you have control over. And that's how you can get paid if they cancel. That's just the fact. You don't want to work for a year and not get paid. But that's mine. Now, when I'm going with a guest, I take all of the terms and conditions that the original couple have, and I dumb them down to the guest level and say, if you cancel, these are your penalties. If you do this, this is your fees, like name changes. It's in there. If you want to run me around and change boyfriends every 2 months, that's fine. I'm charging you to change their name every time. I actually did have somebody who did that. We called them Stella. That was not their name, but she was definitely getting her groove back, and she ended up changing the name 7 times, and the 8th name was the original person's name. They got back together. Ay, ay, ay. So that's a lot of work. Charge for that. You're chasing who she's dating this week. So that's how I do it, and I think that details of what exactly you're expecting of the guests, what exactly you're expecting of the group leader, and what they're expecting of you is super important to put in there.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous of Stella. She's evidently got the dating game down. That's pretty good. Kim,
Well,
what
she
about
did go
you?
through a late in life divorce first, and that was
Kim, what do you do with
rough.
client agreements?
So I mean, I guess you have kind of have two in the process. The first one for me is when after the consultation, I tell them about the fee and I see a lot of questions. I only charge $300, guys. I am not charging a large fee. That is a choice I've made. I know my average wedding commission on a group is about $8,500. So on a group of like 25 rooms, that is obviously bigger, numbers or bigger commission. But so for me, it's not worth it for a larger amount to lose a wedding because they don't want to pay the fee. And I'm just finding in a lot of different spaces like Facebook groups and things like that, there's so many agents saying, I'm free, which even if you don't charge a fee, please don't say you're free. You can say like my services are complimentary, but
Complimentary.
it just makes it sound a little cheap. But anyway, so you've got that agreement that I send in Square, and there's Stripe, I think people use too, but you can send it in Square. It sends them an invoice for $300 once they pay that. Now, in those terms, very similar to what Sue said. I mean, nothing earth-shattering and different there. Once they pay that, then I start working on the quote. And I know some people had asked, like, how long? I say 3 business days. The person I work with that does my quoting is fast. I mean, she is good. Like, I can get up, run down, grab a snack, and like my quotes are in my inbox. So, you have to gauge who you're working with and how long it's going to take them. But that's what I use. So my next agreement is the actual contract. And like Sue said, I don't send a supplier invoice for anything. I don't care if you're booking a cruise or a single spring break vacation. Everything runs through an invoice in my CRM that has my terms, my logo. So in there, I'm including the same things. Yes, I charge a change fee if you continuously, have Stellas in your group. And a lot of these fees that I put in my contract, a lot of times we'll say, oh, as a courtesy, we were able to get that waived for you. So it might not even be that we always charge them, but we want to have the right to charge them if you are a pain, basically. So we identify the booking window for the group, like tell them when they have to have their rooms booked by to get their group discount. We identify the payment deadlines. We also say that our deposits and final payments are non-refundable because we are able to, if a guest books a room and then cancels, we are able to retain that deposit, before we go into any sort of penalty period as a commission. So we do that, we can keep that as a travel agent fee. So we put that all payments are non-refundable, regardless of the terms that the hotel gives us. But remember, they don't see those terms. They have no idea what you're getting from the hotel or the tour operator. So we do that. We put cancellation fees in there. We generally don't charge those, but we want to, again, have that ability to do it if we need to. We did it on one group because they were a pain. But most of the time, as long as we're retaining those deposits, we're good with that. And because I do have a team of employees that handles all my servicing, so I've got to be able to pay them, and that part's important to, if we're spending a lot of hours doing something, we want to recoup that. And then the other thing I put in there, and I think this is so important with groups, is should one of your guests charge back, they do a chargeback, that we will take that out of the wedding couple's comps, basically. And it's not worded like that, but just so you guys understand, that's what we do. So it's, we hold the comps a little bit just to see if there's any immediate chargebacks after travel. But otherwise, if there are and we don't resolve it, we will pull that out of the wedding couple's comps. And honestly, I don't even think we've had to do that. I think we've gotten most of them in a favorable position. But that is because, probably like Sue's, you have these airtight agreements that not only the wedding couple, but also the guests are also signing. So it makes a big difference. Protect yourself because you
John.
want to charge back to do you in.
Yeah, Suze.
John, could I add something to this?
Sure.
So, if you don't have a travel attorney, please get one. And there's one thing that's super important because when I lived in Indiana for many years, which was different than it is in Florida, there are different rules and laws and how you word things. For example, in Indiana, you could not say a non-refundable deposit. You had, or sorry, yeah, a non-refundable deposit. You had to say a non-refundable deposit that acts as a retainer. Because if it's not a retainer, so a retainer versus a deposit is one is services yet to be rendered and one is for services that are going to be rendered, that are agreed to be rendered. Yet to be rendered versus agreed to be rendered. I know, right? Crazy. We think it's the same thing, but it's not. So on all of my documents, it does, even though I'm in Florida now and it doesn't have the same rules, it's overkill, but it says it's a non-refundable retainer that acts as a deposit. So that's super important depending on where you're at. The second thing is, yes, absolutely agree with her on the, oh goodness, I just turned to my mother and forgot what I was going to say. We were just talking about this and you said something, Kim, and I was like, oh, yes, we got to talk about that. You know, it'll come back to me, I'm
It'll
sure. And
come
if it
back.
doesn't, just listen to Kim again.
Yeah. Folks, we've talked really quickly about some contract terms here. For DWHC members, we do have sample and template contracts that they can use. A couple are very specifically written for destination weddings, and we have language for things like bad behavior by guest and chargeback. So we mentioned earlier in the call, if you're not yet a member, please hold on. Don't join just yet because at the end of the entire class, we've got a special offer for you. But yeah, Suze,
Yes,
did
it
you
was about
remember?
chargebacks.
Yeah.
So on every single form I have that they have to sign, it does address chargebacks and it explains a chargeback because a lot of people don't know what it means. And we always state out, you know, basically that whenever you make a charge with us, if you choose to put back to your company that this is potential fraud, that we will go to you to remedy this. And if you do not, we let them know we're going to the couple to remedy it and that the couple will have to pay it so that they know there's no just, oh, you're not just screwing Suze, you're screwing your best friend. And then in doing so, the way we word the difference on the chargebacks coming out of your comps is that it says something to the effect of, your comps will be sent to you within 90 days of your return of travel, less any shortages or chargebacks or due fees on your entire group. And I don't know the exact wording, but that's the concept. And so it names off that if there's due fees or if there's chargeback or if there's like she said, someone who's just short paid, they're just short for whatever reason, that all of those things can come out of your comps. So that they
Yeah.
know that they're not getting that $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 back. They're getting two, you know.
Good.
So
Okay. All
we
right.
also
Thanks.
don't disclose the comp amount. Like we will tell them they'll get the comp amount when they come back from their wedding trip. So we don't actually disclose that in advance, even though the tour op has provided us that number well in advance, because you never know what will happen and whether there's a chargeback.
Bingo.
Or if all of a sudden half your guests get sick the day before travel and they don't travel, your comps are based on the number of rooms that travel. And you know, you've got to kind of protect yourself there. So I really do recommend holding that number. And you know, again, like I just say, this is when you will be provided that number. I don't say like we get it and don't give it to you. Like they are listening to what you're saying. So I think that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly why we use the within 90 days, 100%. It's, yeah,
Yeah.
within 90 days. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Folks, thanks for hanging in with us here. We've got about 12 minutes left. Two big topics we want to cover. So I want to go to Kim first and then Suze. Service and planning fees. To clarify for everybody, for antitrust reasons, you are your own business owner, even if you're an agency of one person. So you'll make your own decisions about whether you charge fees and what amount. But for examples today, I want to ask Kim and then Suze, you don't necessarily have to give us your amounts, but could you tell us what types of service and planning fees you've chosen to charge for destination weddings?
Yeah, so I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I just charged 300, which I know is very low, But there's also a lot of people that don't charge anything. So I feel like it's a very fair amount that people will pay. It's not such a large number that, they're really like, whoa, I've got to, but it's enough to get that commitment. And that was really the purpose when I decided to add fees was, I mean, yeah, of course it's great to make more money. We all want to do that, but it was really more about the commitment. And I wanted someone that was committed to working with us and wasn't just, going crazy and going back and forth between people and eventually not booking. So it was enough that it, hurt their pocketbook a little, but not too much. So that was how I did that. And honestly, it doesn't matter if you're booking 10 rooms or 100 rooms. Like I do the same fee. We do, our entire booking process is automated. So for me, I don't like, I'm not, my team's not booking the rooms. They're coming into us booked. And that is, and because I know everybody's going to ask in the chat, so I'm just going to head this off the pass right now. We use ALG and they have custom event pages, and we create one and give it to the guest, and they book their own rooms. It's fabulous. So it saves us so much time. So for me, I want the bigger groups. I'm not going to charge a higher fee to discourage them because that is definitely money in the bank, the more rooms they book. So that's how I decided for weddings what we do.
Good. Okay, Suze.
So as Kim mentioned, these are very personal things for each agent. And as you said at the beginning, everybody kind of has their own way of doing things. I have been complimentary since I started. I do quite a few weddings, so I haven't changed that. But I do have a very unique way to get people to book on time. I tell them that if you book within this window, there's no booking fee. If you book after that window, there is. So I get my fee. I just get it on the back end for the procrastinators. Yeah. And then on cancellations, if there's any cancellations, whether it's an individual room or even a whole group, there are definitely fees there. Anytime someone's doing something in travel that they're not getting paid a commission on, you really should charge a fee, period. 100%. So the things like, maybe setting up air or I mean, unless of course you're doing it in a package where it does come with some commission or whatnot, because I know through ALG I do sometimes do some air and it does come kind of give me a little bit of something. But like if I'm doing extra stuff that they maybe want me to do, like setting up a catamaran, and that company doesn't pay a commission, and that's who they want to work with because they saw online how wonderful they were or whatever. I'm going to charge a fee for that. And of course, anything I do in the wedding planning and in the concierge service and the on-site coordination and in event design, all of those things cost a fee. So they can buy a package or they can buy consultation hours. Either works for me. Most of the time, if they buy consultation hours, I give them the right to upgrade to a package. So that when they get to the point where they've now spent near what they would have for a package, now they can ask me unlimited. And that seems to help. It's certainly up to you what your business model is. There's no right or wrong, but you must tell your clients what you're doing. Like she does, she sends a stripe and says this, or a square and says this is my fee. And that's super important to be transparent with it. And if you aren't charging a fee, obviously the word complimentary is way better than I'm free. I'm free just shows you don't value yourself. So I totally agree with that 100%. It's many different ways to say the same thing. And then definitely put some fees in there to cover you on cancellations. Like she said, the last payment's non-refundable and very much like Kim, I've definitely said, oh, I was able to get that waived. If they're great people and they haven't caused me problems, then I have no problem with that. If they're a royal pain in the you know what, my chukus doesn't need any more pain, so they're getting the PEET attacks. 100% gonna happen. So,
Yeah.
it's hateful to say it that way, but some people are just a PEETA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's tackle the last topic today. And for everybody hanging on with us, thank you for your time today. We have two more of these. We have one next Wednesday, a week from today, same time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific, one 2 weeks later. So the September 10th, September 17th, we're going to get into everything else. Next week, it's a lot about contracts. There are typically three contracts with the usual destination wedding group. Then we're going to get into how do you keep the guest engaged between the time they do the deposit all the way to departure. Lots more coming up in the next 2 weeks, but we're ending today with proposals. Suze, I'll go to you first and then Kim. How do you put your proposals together? Do you use certain tools? Do you have any, tell us what tool you use for proposals and any tips you'd share.
So I do have Traveljoy, and I do put together a kind of a welcome letter and then an itinerary on that welcome letter and then a booking page on it. And I've used Traveljoy, although I'm with ALG and have started thinking about using the booking the way she does. But when I'm talking about a resort with customers and with potential customers and trying to put together a proposal, I make sure to send them my paperwork, not the original quote from FunJet or from Travel Impressions or from whomever. I actually put it on my paperwork, as she said. Everything should come through your agency, not through someone that they may, know who they are or not know who they are. So I put the quote together and I have my own terms and conditions on that quote. I put a few pictures on it that are marketing pictures, and then I put a couple pictures up of mine. And they say, this is what the resort says the room looks like. Here's where I was at the resort and what the room looked like. And I let them see side by side so that they can see that this really is what the room looks like. It's just different lighting, this is what you should expect. This is the last time I was here, and it's a little different than what they're putting out online, So I kind of give them a realistic picture versus a glamorous picture for the purpose of protecting them. But it also helps sometimes sell the property or sell the one I want to sell.
Yeah, great.
So whenever I'm sending, and I usually do three quotes without charging a fee. And it's mainly because by the time I'm on the third one, I can usually figure out what resort they belong in. But you get better at that as you get older, and you can save a lot of time by kind of being able to be present at these resorts, and learning from them and doing webinars and, things like that. So.
Good. Okay. Kim?
I do my quotes or my proposals for the wedding couple in Vacation CRM. That's the CRM that I use. That's how I organize my entire process. So we have templates already built for each hotel that we're quoting. We put a few samples of the guest rates and like a 3-night stay and a 7-night stay. So they can kind of see like, oh, my guests will probably stay 3 nights and we'll probably stay 7. This is, and we put a few room categories. We don't go crazy. And I always say like, once we pick a resort, we'll give you the full rate grid. Like it's no problem, but I don't like to overwhelm them. And then we already have a box built out for the comps for that hotel. So it shows them what they will get, if they fill, if the comp is one free room for every 10, if that's what the hotel gives them, we'll put that in there. We do not keep any, I know some people have asked, we don't keep the comps. I don't mark up the rates. I've already gotten a fee and keep deposits. Like that's kind of my thing, but we just put the comps in right as the hotel provides them, or actually the tour operator provides them to us. One thing we do though, is we get rid of like the junky stuff, like a welcome drink. Well, yeah, guess what? Everybody gets a welcome drink at that resort. I'm not putting that in your quote or in your contract, because when you put them in your contract, you are legally responsible for them. And if a guest walks in and isn't offered a welcome drink, I don't want to be responsible for that. So we take the fluffy ones out and just kind of leave the room upgrades and the, one free room for every 10 or whatever that's in there, the big ones. So that's how we do it.
Okay. Folks are right at the top of the hour. Our two guests today, just their two agencies, do a couple of hundred destination wedding groups a year and a couple thousand wedding guests, I'm sure. We have six of these great members, very dedicated, very active members who've agreed to be part of this DWHC Summer School. Again, two more hours like this, September 10th, next Wednesday, September 17th, the Wednesday after that, 4 p.m. Eastern. On Friday, this Friday, which will be September 5th, we'll send you the written Q&A list, everything you've typed in today, plus any questions, even after the webinar is over, you can send them to support at our initials, dwhsa.com. And we're going to get all that out on Friday, along with the link to the video for the conversation today. Thank you for being here today. And a big thanks, especially to our friends at AIC Hotel Group. That's the Hard Rock people, Unico, which is really a brand that's expanding a lot. It was just Unico Cancun, and now it's Montego, it's Jamaica, it's Punta Cana, it's Puerto Vallarta. The BDMs for AIC will be reaching out to you, and they're going to be very helpful if you need anything putting destination weddings together. A big thanks to our two friends today who are so busy with their own businesses, Suzanne Hare, Travel Agent Suze in Florida. Suze, thanks so much as always.
My pleasure.
And Kim Goldstein, who's with Journey, owns Journeys Inc. in Virginia. Kim, thanks for all you do to help agents too.
Yes, my pleasure too.
Guys, thanks so much for your time today, and we will see you next Wednesday. Have a good afternoon, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.